Hey, 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 how y'all doing? Welcome back to the Core Queen Chat. We are on episode 80, y'all. Can y'all believe it? Episode 80. I can't believe it, but I can feel it because I'm tired. But I am here and I have an amazing guest. We are going to be talking about something that I think is super important. I hope y'all think it's important too, because I am trying to figure out why so many women are struggling with fertility issues. I don't know if it's a new phenomenon or if it's, I know it's always been happening, but it just seems like it's being, vocalized more and putting more highlight on it. And it's just seemed like it's just more people having a problem with it. So I have an amazing doctor coming on the show today to talk about all these things, about women's reproductive systems, all the things that people just need to know about. And men, y'all need to know about this stuff too. It's not just about women. When y'all going into these relationships and having these babies and just being in relation with a woman, you just need to know some of this stuff too. So I got some good questions from my guest. But before I bring her on, we're going to tell you a little bit about her. So Dr. Donna Adams Pickett, a board certified OBGYN with decades of clinical experience, is redefining how women understand and manage their health. Known for her compassionate and holistic approach, Dr. Adams Pickett helps patients bridge the gap between medical jargon and meaningful understanding. She is a trusted voice on topics such as reproductive health, menopause management, and preventative wellness, offering practical insights that resonate with both medical and general audiences. Y'all welcome Dr. Donna to the show.
Hello. Hello, everybody.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. I am so, so excited to have you on the show today because we need some answers.
I hope I can provide some for you.
I do too. And just so the people know, you are from Portsmouth, Virginia, but yes, you currently live in Augusta, Georgia.
Yes.
So we've got us a good old East Coast girl. Okay. I'm excited because I know lately we've heard a lot about women's health, especially like in the government and especially with Black women, maternal health and just all kinds of things when it comes to our reproductive system. It seems like we are being put on front street on it. Like everybody's talking about it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I think it's important for us to tackle this and to just get some information out there for people who may not understand it at a basic level.
Yes.
So my first question for you is, what inspired your journey into women's health and what keeps you passionate about the work today?
Well, thank you for that question. And definitely thank you for having me here. I've told this story many times, but I really do feel like it shapes who I am. I actually decided to go into women's health due to an unfortunate history of mine. And that is that my paternal grandmother died in childbirth. This was in Greenville, North Carolina. So you're familiar with that part of the East Coast. So very close to where I grew up and that Virginia, North Carolina border. And this was in 1943. And, from what I can understand, for at least what my father told me, he was only 12 years old. It was probably something that and nowadays could have saved her, something that if she were delivering in an area that was amenable to the care of Black women, as particularly poor Black women at that time, my father would not have grown up without his mother and without his baby sister, because the baby died as well. And my father, the kindest, sweetest man in the world, it shook him and shaped a lot of the things that he did. And I just grew up thinking, I don't want any other dad to have to tell his little girl this story. Mm-hmm. So when I decided to go into women's health, that was my driving force. I even have a picture in my waiting room of a Black woman with a baby in her womb. And for me, it is, to me, my ancestor, my grandmother speaking to me, telling me, care for the women in a way that I did not receive care. Yeah. So that my life and the life of my daughter was not in vain. And that has driven me for nearly 25 years and continues to drive me to this day.
Wow. Now that is inspirational. And it's like, even knowing that story is amazing, because all of us don't get to learn that much history and where we came from. So that's inspiring, seriously. So that makes sense that you're in this field.
Yes.
Did you ever aspire to be anything else other than that?
Yeah. So, you know, interestingly, I was always interested in this, but, you know, I'm a first generation college student, college graduate. So I knew I was interested in science and thought, okay, science, you go to medical school to become a doctor. And then I went to a medical doctor. Then I went to Howard University. I'm in Washington, D.C., and that was the first time that I was actually exposed to doctors who were scientists, Black doctors who were scientists, who were in the laboratory making medical phenomena occur. And I was just mesmerized by that. So the first part of my career actually is in science. I actually have a PhD in microbiology and immunology, and did research at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention before going to medical school. Because even though I love science and I love all that science provided, I think the tug of my grandmother was tugging me back to, no, baby, that's nice, but I got something else I want you to do. I ended up in medical school, and it has been a great marriage of the disciplines, having that science background.
That is so dope. Yes.
Thank
Black
you.
Girl magic.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. So you're known for bridging the gap between medical talk and real talk.
Yes.
Why do you think so many women struggle to understand what's happening with their bodies?
Well, it's multi-layered. One of the things is that it is always assumed that we will not understand. So a lot of what we don't know about our bodies is that we weren't taught things about our bodies, because the assumption is, oh, she'll never understand that anyway, so I'm not even gonna bother to break it down for her. So that's coming from my side of the fence of my colleagues who are physicians. But I think there's another component of this that we don't speak about a lot. Culturally, our community has a very fractured relationship with comfort with reproductive health. I mean, you think about it, and everybody take a moment to think about, particularly the women who are listening. When you started your period, what was your mother's response? What was your father's response? You know, the wailing, gnashing of teeth. Oh, I don't want to talk about it. Oh my God, just go to the room. But here's the box of tampons. Not tampons. Community doesn't use tampons. Here, box of pads. Don't ask me about it. Dads are like, oh, my baby girl is gone. So we have shrouded our reproductive health in shame. So we teach our girls from an early age that your reproductive parts and things that's going on with them is a taboo subject.
Yeah.
And the result is we don't talk about what's going on with us. You know, so we don't talk about Bruno. We don't talk about our boobs. We don't talk about our pubes. We don't.
We don't. Nope.
We don't. It is multi-layered. We don't embrace the education in our homes, in our neighborhoods. And then on this end, the medical community just says, oh, they don't talk about that, and we're not going to talk about it with them.
That is so true. And when you say that, I'm thinking about, like, my mom. That conversation was so uncomfortable. And then that literally translated to when I went to the doctors for the first time, or it's just like, if I had a problem, I just didn't say anything. I just dealt with it.
Right.
Wow. You're
right. Right.
That's tough. Interesting. I'm trying to think back of when my daughter had her. I think I was really open with my daughter, because I didn't want her to experience that. I just wanted to be a normal conversation. I didn't want her to feel like it was something that she had to be ashamed of. I just started talking to her early about it, just so it was like a regular conversation.
Yeah. But Dee Dee, I had a patient as recently as last week who asked me about, is it okay to stop her daughter's period from starting? I was like, come again? She said, because her daughter, she's co-parenting, and her daughter was starting to have her period, starting to show signs of it when the daughter was with her dad. And the dad said, hey, we were talking about this in the barbershop. Can't you stop it? Why don't you ask her doctor about stopping it? The baby isn't my patient, but the mom is. And I said, okay.
If y'all find a way, please tell me how.
And I said, what signal are you sending to your daughter when you all are having discussions about stopping a very natural progression?
Right.
You didn't stop her from crawling. You didn't stop her from walking. You didn't stop her from going to kindergarten. You are trying to stop a natural part of her. So what is her reaction going to be? There is something bad about this.
Mm-hmm. That is awful.
You were a great parent, but I'm going to tell you, we would like to think that those older approaches to reproduction just happened with our parents and grandparents. It's still happening now.
That is so sad. I feel so bad for kids to have to deal with that, because mm-hmm. I know what it feels like. So you just really feel you feel dirty. You feel like, yeah, that's a horrible feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Poor kid. Poor girl. See, men swear they have it so bad.
they don't know the half of it.
Okay. So how has your approach to women's health evolved over the years, like with medicine and patients, and like how everything has changed? How has your approach changed?
Well, you know, I don't know if it necessarily changed, but I know how I started it and wanted to keep it going. I figured that I could marry again those two backgrounds, the PhD and the MD, because I started off as a college professor doing research and then went to medical school. So I wanted to create environments where women felt safe. They felt safe enough to say, I don't understand that. Can you break that down to me? And, you know, the running joke that I have with my patients is that my office is GYN University. When you gonna learn something when you leave, I'm gonna draw pictures. I'm about like the Temptations dancing in there. I'm going to do something to make sure that it resonates with you and it clicks. My feeling is that if I teach you, you'll go and then teach your family members, and you'll teach your daughters and your granddaughters, and then they'll teach their friends. And then the information spreads, particularly in our community. And we're not in that information deficit anymore. We are truly becoming health literate. And once we become health literate, we become health powerful.
I like that. Yeah, I like that, because I know when I go to the doctor, sometimes I'm like, what? I don't even know what you're talking about. Like, what? And they're just like spitting all this jargon out. And it's like, you think I'm supposed to know what you're talking about? This is crazy.
Right. And when you think about it, when you go get your car repaired, not saying that we're cars, but they don't start talking to you about the ins and outs of the catalytic converter. They say your engine is making this noise because something is not connecting here. They have found a way to take a very complex topic and break it down in a way that you understand why it is necessary for you to have that car fixed. If we don't change your oil, this is what's going to start happening with your engine.
Right.
It is my feeling that we as clinicians need to take that same approach. The Latin meaning of doctor is teacher.
Mm.
So we should approach that when we're taking care of our patients, that we should be teaching the process.
I agree. I'm going to tell my doctor that next time. I need you to be teaching me.
Do that. You need to teach me something. Don't let me walk out of here with a question mark hanging over right. my head.
Exactly. So what are the most common misconceptions about reproductive health that you've seen?
The most common misconception is that Black women are hyperfertile. That Black women, that you just look at us and we get pregnant.
I feel that.
Black women actually have the highest infertility rate in all ethnicities. Have the highest infertility rate.
Are you serious? Now that is a shocker.
I'm at the highest infertility rate. So, you know, multifactorial, but you look at all the things that can cause, that contribute to infertility, like PCOS. Mm-hmm. So fibroids, mm-hmm. pelvic inflammatory disease, endometriosis. All of those conditions, if they're diagnosed early, can be taken care of in a way that would not impact fertility. Mm-hmm. But one, as we talked about, is that we don't talk about our reproductive systems. So we go around with our very, very heavy, painful, difficult periods. We go through with our pelvic pain, and either we ignore it and or it is dismissed by our care providers. Our care providers will say things like, well, Black women tend to have heavier periods. In the meantime, the patient may have a fibroid that's growing as large as a grapefruit. You know, I have painful periods. Black women tend to have painful periods. Well, that patient may have endometriosis that's causing a significant amount of scarring in the pelvis and preventing her from being able to ovulate successfully.
Wow.
That is a huge misconception. And because there's this idea that Black women are hyperfertile, we usually go a long time before we're diagnosed with infertility. It's, you know, can't get pregnant. You need to take more naps. You need to, you know, stop stressing so much. Take a bubble bath.
Wow.
Yeah. We're losing time. We lose time. And then in the meantime, you know, all hell is breaking loose in our pelvis because we lost that time.
Dang. I'm really learning a lot today.
GYN University, girl.
Yes. I should have brought me a notepad. I'm like, go watch this back. Look. I've definitely used the whole term. If you look at me, if you breathe on me, I'm going to get pregnant. I've definitely used it because I mean, I really am super fertile. Like, when does it end? but I do, like, my cousin, she really suffers really badly from fibroids. Like, it's awful. Ever since we were in high school, and I didn't understand. She's, like, at home, taking days off from school, like, having to get all kind of shots, and her periods were so painful. But, I mean, I'm a kid. I don't know what this is. I've never seen it before. Even to this day, she still deals with it. So
Wow. It's
like, this is awful. Yeah. Dang. Okay. So that is a huge misconception.
Wow. Huge.
Black women are not that fertile.
We're not that fertile. Number one in infertility.
That is so shocking to me.
Right. And I'm so glad you're giving that topic a platform, because a lot of times, you know, we're on the grind. We are getting, you know, many of us are still first generation college graduates. We're working on our careers because we think, oh, we can get pregnant with no problem. And then we get to 36, 37, 38 and decide, okay, yeah, I'm ready to have a baby, and are unable to get pregnant. So I always like to, when my late 20-year-olds, and I just say, listen, I'm not saying go get pregnant next year. I'm just saying put it on the 5-year plan. Mm-hmm. Start preparing yourself to be intentional about getting pregnant instead of just assuming that when you're ready, it's just going to happen.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Absolutely. Because I think right now, especially like with this generation, they are just not in a rush.
No. And I'm not saying they got a rush, but I'm just saying I don't want that disappointment.
Right.
When it happens. And then, you know, the because there's that myth that we're hyperfertile, when they do decide to settle down and get pregnant and they're unsuccessful, we have the well-meaning family members, church members, coworkers. When are you going to have a baby?
Oh my goodness. That is so disrespectful in my opinion. Like, get out them folks' womb. Don't worry.
Get out of their womb. But they... Do you, it, I'm telling you, I'm the one though that's in the office holding their hands while they are sobbing uncontrollably because they're tired of hearing that pressure. You know, just got married and we've been married now for say 3 years. When are y'all gonna get pregnant? They don't know that that poor lady has been trying to get pregnant for 3 years, or that she's gotten pregnant and has had, you know, two or three pregnancy losses early because her fibroids have been making it difficult to carry the pregnancy to term.
Yeah.
Or when you're going to have another baby, this baby, you know, needs a sibling, and the last pregnancy almost killed them. And I told them, you don't get pregnant again.
Right. Yeah. That's so, one of my friends literally just posted this the other day because she's been married, I want to say at least 5 or 6 years, and they don't have any kids. And she just made the post. She was like, I am tired of people coming up to me asking me when I'm going to have a baby. It's rude.
And what people don't know is that they don't realize, but they think is a little joke, maybe a fresh paper cut.
Yeah.
Maybe a fresh paper cut. And so we do need to be very candid with fertility issues in our community and give it the respect that it needs on so many levels.
I agree. Because I think there is a link between mental health and infertility issues that people don't really talk about.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's very disconcerting, particularly when you see your compatriots, those, your friends and your family, they are having several babies. And again, there's this myth, this idea that we get pregnant easily. We get pregnant in our families. Everybody in our family has big, you know, gets pregnant like that. So they internalize something must be wrong with me.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are those will pray about it. I believe if you pray about it, the Lord will grant you a baby just like he did Sarah. Just like he did. And so then you start, they start thinking, well, I must not be good enough for God to give me a baby.
My goodness. Yeah.
It's soul crushing. Soul crushing. So yeah.
Yeah, that's gotta be tough. Mm-hmm. Y'all stay out of folks' wombs. Leave people alone.
Hey, public service announcement.
Oh my heavens. So what's one thing that you wish every woman understood about menopause management?
Oh, I love this topic. What I love about this topic is that about menopause management. Oh, the one thing. Oh, let me find the one thing. Can I give you two?
You can give me as many as you want.
Okay. One, you are not crazy. Everything that's happening to your body, there is a true biologic explanation for it. Mm. It isn't just a feeling that something is off. There is something truly malfunctioning on the inside because it doesn't have its fuel, the hormones.
Mm. Wow.
Two, hormone therapy is largely safe. So the feeling that has been prevailing for decades that hormone therapy can cause cancer, please, please, please disabuse yourselves of that notion. That is not true. The research has borne that that is not true. And the research also shows that hormone therapy can actually lead to longevity of your life.
That's good to know.
Yes.
That's good to know, because I don't think, I know for sure we don't talk about menopause enough at all.
No.
There is like zero education behind this in the family, like nothing. All you hear is, oh, I'm hot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The change.
When did that start?
I mean, and think about it. When you were getting ready to go to puberty, that somebody did talk to you a little bit. Sixth grade teachers talked to you about it.
Yep.
When you were pregnant, you went to childbirthing classes, got mm-hmm. the what to expect when you were expecting. No one prepares you for this season.
No.
But trust me when I say this truly has the potential to be the best season of your life.
And it's funny because my cousin, she was here visiting and she was telling me, girl, ooh, I'm going through the change. And uh-huh. I'm like, well, what's happening? And she's giving me like play by play. And I'm like, oh my God. She's
like, what?
What? Is it that bad? She said, but I found these hormones, something. Because she's a nurse. And so uh-huh. she started taking something. And I'm like, she said, it was a miracle. I'm so much better. And I'm like, I need you to send me whatever it is you said you took so I can be prepared, because I don't want to go through what you was going through. Like, that sounds like torture.
Well, you know, my whole thing is health education and health literacy. And that has been a huge focus of mine in this last year, is to try to provide more health education about menopause, so mm-hmm. that when it happens, instead of going, oh my God, what is happening? You're like, all right, now my time has come. Yes.
Yeah.
You don't feel like it's the end, that you feel like it's the beginning.
Yeah.
And now that we know what we know about hormone therapy, we know that not only as soon as you start the symptoms, but when you just enter this season, you don't even have to really start the symptoms. We go ahead and start supplementing you, because menopause is a hormone deficiency state. So mm-hmm. just like when you're vitamin D deficient, we give you vitamin D. You're iron deficient, we give you iron. So when you become hormonally deficient, we give you those hormones.
Mm.
The beauty is that you're at the stage in life where you've already pretty much lived your life. So you're not trying to become at the peak of your career. Your kids are grown.
Mm-hmm.
You've had all your good friends and your good times. You don't answer to anybody anymore. This has the potential to be a hot damn kind of moment. Okay.
I need my daughter to be listening to this, because she is adamant about me having a daughter, a sister for her. I'm like, little girl, she already has a daughter and a son, and she wants a sister from me.
She wants a Ooh. Sister from you.
Yes. She says she wants a grand sister.
Well, listen, we were just having this conversation. You know, when you were growing up, everybody had that one family in the church or the neighborhood. And you were like, now, how is it that Miss So-and-so's daughter and her granddaughter are 3 months apart?
Yeah, man, I'm like, little girl, if you don't know, no.
Oh,
she's
no.
like, Mom, but you can just bring her to me. What? Are you crazy?
So when you need to save her, then
I'm like, you better act like your daughter is your sister. And I don't know. You gotta.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, too
That's
much.
Funny. No. That's funny.
Yeah. So how can women prepare for perimenopause and menopause, both physically and mentally?
Great question. Because we recently just had our North American Menopause Society meeting, and one of the emphasis at the meeting was to really consider treating women in the perimenopausal period. So that's the period before you go the full 12 months without a period.
Mm.
I think it's preparing women that the hormone levels that you had in puberty when you were tight and right and everything was flowing, that they have been gradually decreasing every year. So even before you get to menopause, when they're pretty much wiped out, yes, you still have hormones, but you don't have hormones at the same level that you did when you were at puberty. So I think that idea of recognizing that the fuel of my hormones is gradually depleting, and instead of ignoring some symptoms, recognize that some of these symptoms may be related to my hormonal levels depleting. Mm-hmm. And even if they're not ready to necessarily take hormones per se, they could take foods that have natural hormones and natural estrogens in them. So, you know, certain products like licorice, red clover, yams, apples, you know, those are things in the diet that are very rich in what we call phytoestrogen, soy. And so they may decide to increase those things in their diet so that they can have those natural phytoestrogens there. And with menopause, what I strongly recommend that patients do is definitely don't ignore your symptoms. Yeah. The one thing we do know about menopausal care is that the sooner we supplement your hormones, the better. Because our research really only is clear about hormone supplementation up until the age of 60, the current guidelines are to not start women on hormone therapy if they're over 60 years old. You know, I always say it's kind of like waiting for the engine to rust and then say, all right, now I'm going to put some oil in it. The engine's going to blow up. So, but a lot of times what happens is, you know, we are taught to soldier through. So we ignore. Mm-hmm. And then we are trying to reverse a lot of damage. Mm. But if we, as soon as we start noticing those symptoms, act on it, we can prevent a lot of significant tissue change and tissue damage.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I need to be signed up early because I ain't got, listen, I ain't trying to go through.
You don't have time for that.
No, thank you. I don't want to be sitting there just regular and just start sweating.
Regular.
please
you're
don't.
Sweating, joint aching, can't. Listen, you're an actress. You need to be able to remember your lines, your podcast. You need to be. And so you need to have, because we do know the role of estrogen in the brain and brain function and brain tissue. So, yeah, I mean, that's why I started myself on estrogen. I was like, I need to be sharp all the time. I don't have time to be trying to find a word. I need to be able to go.
See, I'll be blaming it on weed. Sorry, y'all. I'm sorry. Oh Lord, see. So what are some holistic and lifestyle approaches that can help ease the transition alongside medical care?
Definitely getting adequate amount of sleep. You know, I truly cannot emphasize the role of getting sleep, because when we sleep, we restore. So not only are you resting, but you're actually getting regeneration of tissue, regeneration of brain tissue, regeneration of liver tissue, actually like a reset every day. It is truly turning the computer off. And so getting adequate sleep is key. A healthy diet with very few processed foods. And so you're decreasing the processed sugars, decreasing the cheese, the fatty. This is what I tell people. If God didn't make it, you don't need to eat it.
If it don't grow, it don't go.
Amen. Amen. Come on, church. Amen. Church. God did not make a Pop-Tart. God did not make a honey bun, but what he did make was an apple. He made some broccoli. So, you know, a healthy, non-inflammatory diet. So, because when we eat those things, and the reason why I kind of harp on dairy a lot, because the dairy that we eat, the basis of it is cow's milk. And when you think about it, a goat doesn't drink cow's milk. A horse doesn't drink goat's milk. That cow's milk was made for that cow's baby, mm-hmm. not your mama's baby. Mm-hmm. So what ends up happening, we often have some pretty extreme inflammatory responses to butter, cheese, cream, because the basis of, but we drink oat milk or almond milk, we don't have those responses because they're not inflammatory to us. So definitely taking on a non-inflammatory diet, removing those, because processed sugar, decreasing your alcohol intake, definitely helps with brain function and definitely decreases those hot flashes, particularly wine, because wine, grapes actually can cause you to have more hot flashes. So if you drink wine and, you know, so you have the grapes and you have the alcohol, you're flashing all night.
Dang. I'm glad I don't like wine.
I know. You know, it's interesting because wheat actually will, it can decrease hot flashes. That's why I always tell people, if you have some beer, though, you'll be all right.
Wow.
But don't do it. It's alcohol.
Right. Listen, y'all heard her. Y'all know I be yelling at y'all about the processed foods and all that crap. So
Tell them, Katie.
Not just me telling you.
Okay. Dee Dee knows what she's talking about. She didn't just pull that out.
She's saying, you know.
Just saying.
Trying to help y'all.
Okay.
So how does stress and unhealed emotional trauma show up in the body, and how can women manage it more effectively?
Oh, excellent. Excellent question. So let's talk from a primitive standpoint. From a very primitive standpoint, when we were hunters and gatherers and we didn't know when our food was going to show up, you know, God made this system so that we will always have the means to have nutrition on board. And so we sort of know how to store things just in case we needed to hunt or gather, but more importantly, in case we had to fight, if we had to run. Because think about it from an evolutionary standpoint, if a saber-toothed tiger was coming at you, grizzly bear was coming at you, you either going to take a direct fight, run out of there, or you're going to try to beat the heck out of that grizzly bear. Mm-hmm. But to do both, you need energy to do that. Mm-hmm. So what your body does, it stores that energy. Your body needs a signal to store that energy, and that signal is cortisol, the stress hormone. So when you're under stress, your body doesn't know that the stress is your job or your boss. Your body thinks it's the grizzly bear. So your body says, "Ooh, honey, we got to store because you need to fight somebody today. You need to fight somebody or you need to run for somebody, and you need adequate energy to do that." So how it shows up in your body, you start gaining weight. You start gaining weight, particularly in your midsection, if you're a woman, because also from an evolutionary standpoint, we needed to keep that. We need to keep all that fat near our belly so we can protect and keep our babies warm, because that's where the uterus is. Mm-hmm. So we start seeing the effects of all that cortisol because our body is constantly storing, and we're storing all of that. Insulin-driven response, the fat in our bellies, we're storing those things in our faces, getting a bit of the hump back because our body feels like it has to be ready to act quickly. And there's also something that's called weathering. How I'd like to describe weathering is if you were sitting here talking to me right now, but somebody walked in the studio and said, "Boo," you know, you want to, you know, fight them, but you also jump. And that jumping makes your heart race. You start breathing more rapidly. Your liver starts pushing out glycogen or glucose so you can prepare to fight or run. And you're shaking a little bit from that moment. You calm down, but your body has been harmed by that surge of adrenaline. Weathering is when you feel that all the time. Because being a woman of color in this country, somebody's always going boo to you. They're going boo to you at the job. They're doing boo to you at the grocery store. They trying to jump out from the corners, you know, in your church group, in your sorority. There's always somebody trying to test you, and you're always jumping.
Yeah.
And after a while, your organ systems can't handle that constant stimulus. And then you start seeing the effects of the diabetes, the high blood pressure, the alopecia, all of that because of that chronic stress.
Wow. That makes sense. See, GYN University.
Amen. Come on. Here's your certificate. Here's your certificate.
Yeah, that makes sense because I had some issues a few months ago where I kept going to the emergency room because I couldn't figure out why my stomach wouldn't stop hurting. And I'm like, they're like, there's nothing wrong with you. They're like, everything is fine. All the tests are fine. Mm-hmm. And it was one black male doctor. He was like, it's stress. Mm-hmm. He said, it's stress. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? You might be right. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
It was stress.
Because think about it, like when, you know, we always say when something's scared you, how your stomach kind of clenches,
yeah,
you know, and think about what if your stomach was clenching like that all the time? All the time.
And he did an x-ray on my stomach. He said, you have so much like backed up stool from mm-hmm. you. He was like, it's like your body is tense. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, I understand. Yeah. It makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Complete stress. That's terrible. It would, when they said it'll kill you, it will literally kill you.
It will. So we have to let it go. We have to, you know, I mean, I know it's not the movie Frozen, but we really do have to let it go. We have to let them, you know, take that power back. Mm. Take that power back from everyone else.
Absolutely. You are so right. Yes. Let's see what we got next. What role we already talked about that. You already talked about sleep and nutrition. We already talked about that. You got to that question before I got to it. How can healthcare providers build better trust with their patients, especially women of color who often feel dismissed or unheard?
Yeah, another great question. It definitely is going to have to come from a place of recognizing, you know, calling the thing a thing. Because healthcare providers have to recognize and accept the history of the relationship of women of color in the medical community. We can't walk into the room and pretend like it didn't happen. You know, truth and reconciliation are reciprocal. Mm. There can be no reconciliation without acknowledgement of the truth. And the truth is that in our community, the reason why we know all we know about cancer is because we took the cells of a Black woman without her permission and exploited them for the use of the medical community.
Yep.
The reason why we know all we know about the Tuskegee, about syphilis, mm-hmm. is because Black men went to receive treatment for syphilis, told that they were, and they were not given it, so that they could watch to see the movement of how syphilis develops.
Yep.
You know, the reason why that sweet young lady, Ariana Smith, in Atlanta, had to carry a baby. After she was brain dead, because her rights, even though she had a durable power of attorney, they said she did not want exhaustive efforts ever made in the event that her life was in danger, that was removed from her. So we could truly see, in my opinion, how long could someone support the life of a baby with mechanical assistance? So I think. And those are just the ones we know about,
mm-hmm.
you know, that we talk about. There's so many more. So I think we have to accept the truth that your average patient of color is going to suspect that you do not have their best interests in mind.
Yep.
And I think that has to be acknowledged. It has to be acknowledged that I can understand why you may not trust what I'm saying. Let me explain to you why, in this case, though, you should consider trusting me. Mm-hmm. And then drawing the pictures, mm-hmm. breaking it down, finding analogies that they can relate to, taking whatever time it takes to say, now, do you feel like you understand? Would you like to bring in a family member or a friend to help you understand? Would you like to go home and think about it a little bit? And then, or let me step out of the room and you make a phone call to help you understand?
Yeah.
Then that's the building of a good relationship.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. That is definitely important, because I know when my grandmother was alive, there were a lot of times where she was at these doctor's appointments by herself, and we didn't realize, like, hold on, wait, somebody needs to go with her. Mm-hmm. Because she's either not comprehending what they're telling her, or mm-hmm. they're not taking her seriously when she's in there. So we need to figure out what it is going on in here. So she has an advocate. That's mm-hmm. really important. And also, I hear this all the time where they'll say, doctors are to Black women as police officers are to Black men. Mm-hmm. And that's sad.
I can definitely understand that sentiment. And I have heard that. What I would like to hope is that we can finesse that a little bit mm-hmm. and say that many doctors are to Black women. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know it's kind of like saying, but there's some good police officers out there. But there are, not only are there many good Black doctors of color, there are a number of allies who are mm-hmm. out there who very much recognize the history and have made it their life's mission to say, it's going to begin with me and begin with mine. I'm in a group of physicians, multi-ethnic group, and you know, we're Black, white, Native American.
We lost her. Uh-oh, Dr. Donna, we lost you.
Happened.
Oh, there you go.
Okay, there we are. I was like, what happened there? But what I love is that we all are very committed to learning about each other. Mm-hmm. They're very committed to learning about us as African-American women. But we, as Black women, we are committed to learning about who they are as Desi women. We're committed to learning who they are as Jewish women, mm-hmm. as Palestinian women, as Native American. And all of us are physicians working in our communities trying to make a change. We are mm-hmm. trying to be the change we want to see. So what I don't want is Black women in our community to actually avoid going to the doctor yeah. because they feel that there is no safe place for them. And there are many safe spaces for Black women in our communities.
Absolutely. And I wholeheartedly agree. I will say I've never had a bad experience with a doctor in my life. Good. So I've been blessed and covered in that way. So, yeah, I am. And I have had all different ethnicities, race, men, women. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter. I've never had a bad experience with a doctor. They've always listened to me. Good. And they've always taken care of me. So I can't even, you know, I'm not even mad at it. So I know that there are allies out there. I know there are good people out there. So
Yeah. And I think you are a testament that we're out there. So it may take some shopping. It may take some. Some shopping and trying around, you know, to find the good fit, but we're out there. We are
absolutely.
Out.
Yeah. And I really wanted to also just do a slight shout out to Tyler Perry, because this season of his show, Sisters, he is highlighting the maternal mortality rate. He actually is really focusing on how Black women have been treated in hospitals when they're pregnant, how they're ignored. Like it's polarizing to watch it like actually unfold in real time and see a woman lose one of her babies, and just showing how a lot of Black women have been treated in those situations. So shout out to him for even highlighting that from a male's perspective.
Absolutely. I'm glad that he is. And I'm glad that we are truly talking about it. Like I said, this is really the impetus for why I became an OBGYN. And, you know, I've been unapologetic about that. I have had times when I was still actively delivering babies, and I never forget one of the traveling nurses had called me one night about a patient's blood pressures. And she had a Black nurse, and she had just taken over from another nurse who was saying, oh, her blood pressures are elevated because she's been arguing with her boyfriend. Oh. Well, the Black nurse comes on. She sees the blood pressures and calls me. She's like, has anybody told you about these blood pressures? I'm like, no. Are you? And I was so upset. I was like, no. And before I didn't even realize, I said, this is why Black women die. And that was her very first night ever working with me. But I was just so, I was like, you don't get a blood pressure that high by yelling somebody, because otherwise my blood pressure would be through the roof. But, you know, she needed to hear that it was okay to acknowledge the elephant in the room. This is why Black women die. Because, again, we belittle the small things that happen to us. You know, and I ended up getting labs on that young lady. And she had severe postpartum preeclampsia.
Wow.
So, yeah.
See, see, thank God for doctors like you.
Well, thank you.
Oh, man. Yeah. So let's see. What's one message you hope every listener takes away about owning their health and advocacy for themselves?
The one message is you matter. You matter. And the reason why that is very important to me, because, again, from a cultural standpoint, we have been taught to not bother people. Be respectful, you know, don't rock the boat, because we don't want to come across as angry and belligerent. So, but who matters more, their feelings or your life? You matter.
That's good. Yes, ma'am. Yeah. So my last two questions, I ask each guest that come on my show the same two last questions.
Okay.
The first one is, what is the best advice you've ever received?
The best advice I've ever received was, it's okay to make a mistake as long as you learn from it.
Oh, yeah, that's good, because we're so hard on ourselves.
Yeah. And it, you know, it gives room to learn.
Yeah.
You know, you're not afraid to make an error, because you recognize, but I'm going to learn from it, and then chances are I won't do it again.
There you go. Absolutely. Last question. What advice would you give 15-year-old Donna?
That being different is okay. I was always the quirky kind of, you know, very quirky, bit of a nerd, but quirky nerd, you know, quirky in the sense that even growing up in a very religious home, always was very open, like, very, I love everybody. I love queer folks. I love, you know, I'm not restricted by what society says I should. And that was not very, that was not well accepted in P-Town in the 1970s and early 80s. It was, but the 15-year-old, it's okay to be a little different.
Yeah.
You're going to be all right being a little different.
Real all right. Dr. Donna, you are so amazing. You are so necessary, and we appreciate you seriously. Like, I've learned so much today, and I hope my listeners learn. I hope they go back and watch this and take notes, because this is some information that we have been in desperate need of for a long time. And hopefully it goes out, because I know a lot of times people say, well, your parents should teach you these things. Your mom or dad should teach you these things. But everybody is not blessed with mentally stable parents or present parents. So having people like you to share this knowledge is so necessary. And I appreciate you for coming on my show.
Thank you for having me. This was so fun. It was like two girlfriends chatting. And I loved it.
Thank you. Look, this is the part of the show where I let you tell people how they can follow you. If you have anything that you want to promote, have coming up, you can let the people know.
Awesome. Well, you can follow me on Instagram at my website is www.augustawomenshealth.com. My Instagram handle is Dr. Donna_thegirlfriendsgyn. On TikTok, I am The Girlfriends GYN. And on Facebook, I am Dr. Donna, The Girlfriends GYN.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Y'all know what to do. I'm Didi Leggett, a.k.a. The Core Queen. This is episode 80 of The Core Queen Chat. I'll be back next week with another episode, but I need y'all to do me a favor. I wrote a book. Guys, I wrote a book, and I need y'all to go get my book. It's called Breaking the Cycle of Childhood Trauma. And it's on Amazon, or you can get it on my website, thecorequeen.com/book. This book has opened a lot of doors for me, but it's also closed one major door. And that's the door to communicating with my mother. She does not speak to me anymore because of this book, but I have no regrets. Yes, it was hard for me to accept it. And maybe one day the door will be back open for her to talk to me again. But I hope I've helped other people. And I know I have, because I've gotten so much feedback from the book. So if you want to write a book and you want to tell some pains or stories, go ahead and do it. You only live once. You got to leave it all on this side of the dirt. So make sure y'all do what y'all need to do with your life, and don't let anybody else stop you. Also, guys, I have so many things coming up that I can't even tell you what it is because I'm sleepy right now. No, I know I have a show. I'll be on a show next week, but I can't tell you the name of it. So follow me on Instagram at Didi Leggett. Or my fitness page, The Core Queen. You can follow me on any platform, Didi Leggett, everywhere. My website is thecorequeen.com. Of course, you can get the book, thecorequeen.com/book. And make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel, The Core Queen Chat. I need you to like, subscribe, share, comment, let people know about the chat. And also, make sure you tune in next week, same time, same place, every Wednesday, 8:30 Eastern Standard Time, right here. And I will talk to y'all next week. Bye, y'all.